Commission meeting of Tuesday, September 19, 2017, 6 p.m. Roll call, please.
Commissioner George?
Here.
Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
And Vice Chair Mack?
Here. We have two commissioners absent this evening. We have flag salute. And join Shiro.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We've reviewed the agenda. Commissioners, any suggestions on any modifications, or is it good?
None.
Okay, the agenda stands as written tonight. Right now, I invite the community for comments and suggestions. You can come up to the mic for 3 minutes and speak on anything that is not in the agenda. And it is not scheduled on the agenda. You can come out, share. The Planning Commission cannot take action on the item. We can listen and possibly take action later on a Planning Commission discussion and see if there's anything that the Planning Commission would like to discuss regarding any comments that might come up. But for now, the mic is open. I have one speaker slip. Terry Tardif.
Hi, my name is Terry Tardif. I live on Fay Avenue. Coming to these meetings has become a major part of our lives. We will continue to come to them to voice our concerns of Popeyes going in across the street from our house for as long as it takes to get our point across. You will get to know us, and hopefully I will get better at speaking in front of you. At the traffic meeting last night, we heard that there is a possibility of this drive-through restaurant being open 24 hours. I'm sure you must know how this made us feel. This is adjacent to a neighborhood. I understand the parcel is zoned mixed-use commercial. But at what point did our neighborhood become mixed-use commercial? By adding the traffic that will pass through our streets, it will be like a major road and not a neighborhood. This will have a major impact on the families that live there. There are many other locations in Arroyo Grande sitting empty that this type of restaurant could be located. With the new plans, the drive-through exit was moved off of Fay, and we appreciate that. But we will still be dealing with delivery trucks at all hours of early morning, noise, garbage, and lighting from the parking lot lights. You know this is also going to affect our property values a lot. We as a neighborhood cannot understand how you, as our city, can even consider these plans unless Ella Foods, Popeyes, has made such a monetary offer for that parcel that you, as our representatives, are not willing to consider the many ways this will impact so many families and lives. You are the ones to rezone this parcel and keep our neighborhood a neighborhood. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any others would like to come to the mic and speak anything that is not on the agenda?
I'm to be John A. Weissong from Grover Beach. I've been over 60 years plus. I worked for Safeway for 37 years. Meat department. And when I come back from Korea, I got a job with Safeway downtown Levick Boulevard. And I remember the man that hired me within 40 minutes said, "Young man, don't you ever forget. The customer opens the doors, turns the lights on, pays the expenses, and your paycheck." I never forgot that. And then it came along with Merle Williams. And he said, "Every customer is right." I disagreed, but I've been there for a long time. So tonight, I have two questions. And I just came from a pasture field where I got cows and calves. And I'm 84 years old. And I was in the cottage hospital 3 weeks ago. They cleaned out my heart. You find an SOB like me, I want to see him. Excuse my language. But anyway, there is a sand pile on Grand Avenue. I want to know why it's there. It's a hazard. It's not safe. I've been almost hit head on twice. I told you the last time I was here. I my kids were growing up. I only had to tell them one time. And I only had to ask Safeway one time. In Korea, the one time. This is about the eighth time calling, trying to find out. Nobody knows. But our tax money turns the lights on, pays your check. Number two is that idiot, that cesspool down there on Oceana. You know, I've seen that thing. I've heard about that thing. It's getting so disgusting to see that on TV. It's horrible. So, the amount of taxes I pay and that when you pay, I have told Grover, I have said it here, you turn, get the grants from the state and you reverse osmosis, because there's not the water you think they're down there. It ain't all there. And you're going to come up, they're already talking about drought in the valley. Why let 100 or 2 or 300 million gallons go into the ocean? All that is money. So I want to know what Mr. Hill sits there and this other lady sits there, John Soltz. It's a disgrace to see that on TV. I don't go mean because I did come tonight. I come out of that pasture field, come here to talk and ask. And I want to know why that can't be done. I've been cross-country 24 times to Dayton, Ohio. And I've gone down the Mississippi and the Ohio River. And there are 2,000 or 3,000 people there in the town, but they have reverse osmosis. They don't let it go in Mississippi. They don't let it go in Ohio. What the H-E-L-L is wrong in California? I know. It's people think they're so smart and intelligent that it goes over the top of them. I had two granddaughters, just one 2 years ago, Alapale, and the other one Fresno. She's got a job in L.A. and farmer job. And she's like me. It didn't take her long to get a job. So, I want to know those two things. Why that sand pile, and it's dangerous. Why is it there? Nobody wants to talk. And then find out from your mayor why they can't get grants if people in 2,000 or 3,000 in the Mississippi and Ohio, why can't they do it here? Why? That has been a horrible mess down there for 40 years. I'm sorry, but what can you get it for?
Thank you. Anybody else from the public would like to speak on a non-agenda item? Seeing no other, I'm going to close the public and bring it back to us. Do we have any written communications that we should be in receipt of tonight for tonight's meeting?
None this evening.
Okay, thank you. On tonight's consent agenda, we have approval of the minutes, looking for a recommendation and action for the minutes of September 5th, 2017.
I just had some minor administrative issues. On page 3, 7B, Chair Martin is missing a T in two spots.
So noted.
That's it.
Any other items?
No.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Changes.
A roll call, please.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
That concludes the consent agenda for approval of the minutes. The remainder of the items are 7B and 7C. 7B is a continued consideration of a resolution approving street names for sub-area 2 in the East Cherry specific plan location, East Cherry Avenue. And 7C is consideration of lot line adjustment number 17003, location 124 South Halcyon Road. Is there any reason to break these apart for discussion tonight?
No, I have none.
None.
I believe we talked about the street names a lot on our last Planning Commission meeting. So entertain a motion for the remainder of the consent agenda items.
I move to approve 7B and 7C as noted in our agenda.
I second that.
Roll call.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mack?
Yes. We now move on to our public hearing items. We have one public hearing item tonight, and it's consideration of draft initial study mitigation negative declaration for the Bridge Street Rehabilitation Project. And McGlish will be sharing the report. Thank you. You're up.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mack and members of the Commission. Very pleased to be here this evening to report on and request consideration of the environmental document for the Bridge Street Bridge Project. Hope to get it up here momentarily. The document before you is referred to as a mitigated negative declaration, and it's a document that was determined appropriate to explain and clarify and deem that the effects of the proposed project for the rehabilitation of the Bridge Street Bridge would not create any significant impact on the environment. And I'm stalling just for a moment to see if we can get the PowerPoint up on the screen before you. I think we're going to just check to check a couple connections, and I would request a brief break, or we can move to the administrative items on the bottom of the agenda.
There you go. Oh. And
there you go. Okay. Back to the presentation, and thank you for your patience. So the document in front of you this evening really started several years ago. Before you, you can see the project location on the left-hand side of the screen. And the Bridge Street Bridge is a very important connection over the Rio Grande Creek. And it's also a very important historical resource, as it is a example of a original pony truss through truss bridge. Originally constructed in 1908, and it is currently supported by a supplemental steel deck truss. It approximately spans about 100 feet, and it has an approach of 24 feet. It does have significant deficiencies, and we have been seeking solution and funding for many years now. Fortunately, the city has been successful in securing 100% funding for this project through the Highway Bridge Program. And over approximately the last 5 years, staff, we've presented status updates at these meetings and a couple times at City Council in 15 and in 17. And the latest City Council meeting where we had a discussion of the status occurred at the very beginning of this year when the selection was made for the rehabilitation alternative. So I'm going to step back and remind ourselves why we have to embark on such a serious amount of work and why we're so concerned. And obviously, beyond getting back and forth over the Rio Grande Creek, one of the main connections, like I mentioned, is that the bridge holds a very special significance for the community, built in 1908. It's eligible for the National Register for Historic Places. It has its history with flood damage in 1914 and went through some retrofits in 1990. The sufficiency rating is now at the point where if we do not do anything to repair or rehabilitate the bridge or replace it, it would have to be permanently closed. And it is what I refer to as a busy little bridge because it has a high average daily traffic of over 3,000 trips. To frame the sequencing of how we go about making determinations of the right project in terms of our need and the potential environmental impacts. It's explained in this slide before you. There's a purpose and need that's established, and we develop a range of alternatives. We connect the technical studies. We come back and revisit those alternatives, and eventually we make a selection and prepare the actual final environmental documents. And the CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, requires us to prepare a document in accordance with that state law, and that's the mitigated neg deck before you, but supporting that is includes several technical studies, and I'll list them out as we go forward here this evening. Back to the public input. I think we covered this. We've had a web page up throughout this time period where folks could visit and see what the project status was and where the various alternatives were over the series of time. And we'll be updating that again shortly as we get through this final environmental hurdle. A little bit about the rehabilitation alternative. The proposed bridge rehabilitation project consists of replacing the existing supplemental truss with a new higher strength supplemental truss, and this is in order to increase live load capacity. A new substructure consisting of a cast-in-place abutments and pier along with a new steel girder approach span and cast-in-place deck would be constructed to upgrade the structure to the latest scour and seismic codes. To rehabilitate the structure, all portions of the existing bridge would be removed, including the existing historic truss would be salvaged for later rehabilitation on the new, stronger supplemental truss. And after the existing bridge structure is removed, the new structure would be constructed. And when that is complete, the design would be able to handle 100% of the current design live loads as well as support the weight of the historic truss. And we're very pleased that this alternative has been approved to go forward with. And in this picture, kind of looks somewhat simple. However, it took a lot of public input and consideration to make that determination. Here's a profile of the bridge project rehabilitation in profile grade. And here is a slide that depicts sort of the area of work, and this includes the both the construction staging area and the actual work area. And so you can see by the nature of the environmental documentations, environmental documents, that it's going to be a lot of work done in the creek bank, as well as on the roadway. And it's going to require kind of an extensive area surrounding the bridge. It will be a very big project for the city. In preparing the required clearance document, this mitigated neg deck, and the accompanying federal document, which is required for the National Environmental Policy Act, a series of documents had to be prepared and reviewed with our both Caltrans and a variety of agencies. And they're listed here before you, and we've completed all of those. Actually, I'd like to take a moment here to point out to the commission our stellar consultant team. They're sitting before you in the audience this evening. Quincy Engineers have been the primary consultant, and Greg Young is here from Quincy. SWCA is the environmental consultant, and John Claxton and Emily Creel are here before you this evening. And this is a team, along with Mark Reno, who's not here this evening, who have been with us this whole time, all through the public meetings, engaging in all the consultations with the other agencies involved. And we've certainly been very pleased to be working with them. I'll take a moment to acknowledge also Jill McPeak. She's a member of our Public Works Department, and she's been the primary shepherd of this process to date. So the sequencing goes that we prepare these documents and we circulate them for the public review. This is and then it comes before you for review and recommendation to the City Council, and the City Council will take final action on this as they're the decision-making body for the project. And once we have that completed, then we can finish the design of the project, which is close, but we couldn't go any further until the environmental clearance was achieved, and then we can go into the actual final preparation of plan specs and estimates and permits, utility relocation, and ultimately construction of the project. The schedule is anticipated to be construction occurring mostly in 2018. We are trying to determine the start and stop of constructions in accordance with environmental constraints with the creek and the seasons for that, as well as our festivals and a busy time of year for the community. And we feel that we'll be able to begin construction in spring of 2019. So it is recommended this evening that the Planning Commission review the draft initial study and the mitigated negative declaration for the rehabilitation project and make a recommendation to the City Council to adopt the mitigated negative declaration and instruct the City Clerk to file a notice of determination. And again, the purpose of this is to evaluate the potential environmental effects of the proposed project and find that the document has been prepared correctly in accordance with CEQA. And once again, that the adoption and certification of the MND will provide us the clearance necessary to go forward. We've gone as far as we can. We need this clearance to proceed with final design. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I'll invite the team, consultant team, to come up and assist us in that. And one other introduction I would like to make, I feel that Robin Dickerson, she's our brand new city engineer. She has not been yet introduced to this commission, and I wanted to do that as well this evening. Robin's been with us for a few weeks now and months. Seems like yesterday came aboard. She's handling a tremendous load very well, and we're very happy to have her. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Welcome aboard, Robin. Thank you.
Welcome.
And thank you for the staff report. Is there any questions of the staff report to staff?
I have none at this time.
I have one. Because the process, I noticed that the environmental technical studies, so they're not finished yet. They're ongoing. And yet you can, I'm just curious that you can get a negative, mitigated negative declaration with studies incomplete. Is that just, is that typical for something like this?
We've actually completed all the necessary technical studies.
So they're done?
For the project,
okay.
Yes.
All right. And the time frame for the whole project, when you went back to that,
the time frame is that once we get environmental clearance, we will be able to proceed with final design, and then we at the same time as that, we'll be able to talk to landowners if we need any construction easements. We are working on utility relocation, and ultimately, after we get the right-of-way certifications and design has been approved, then we can go into advertisement for construction. And at this time, we feel that 2018 will be completing those steps and advertising for construction. And at the end of 2018, it's a long lead time, and we'll be able to begin construction after that. And that, again, has a lot to do with timing of when we can get into the creek and actually disturb those creek areas and begin work.
Okay. And what's the load will obviously be greater what's the finished load for the bridge? Does anybody know that?
With that, I'll invite Greg Young from Quincy Engineering, and he can.
They thought they were going to have to get up,
So the design standard is AASHTO LRFD Bridge Design Specifications, and they require what they call an HL93 load, as well as a permit load, and then what they also call a tandem load. So it'll be full legal load. There won't be any load restrictions. Currently, the bridge is posted at 3 tons, which is the very lowest posting that they allow before they close it. So it'll be a significant increase. So you'll be able to drive pretty much anything you want across that thing.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you. That's all I have.
Had a few questions, and this could either be for you or staff. On it's regarding the red-legged frog issue. It says no protocol surveys were conducted for California red-legged frog, and a species was not observed. I guess my question, and then there's protocol for a biologist to be on site during the activities to look for this animal. So is just to assume that the animal does exist and we didn't do the survey? Or I just want to make sure if we need the survey that we do the survey. If we don't need it, then obviously we don't. It's kind of a contradiction.
Right, and I'll ask John Claxton from SWCA to address that.
Okay, yeah, that's a very good question.
In this particular project and many projects in the county, the reason why a protocol level survey for the species wasn't conducted is, first of all, we know the species occurs in Arroyo Grande Creek. It's been documented upstream and downstream. The great part about working on these local assistance projects through Caltrans is that Caltrans has already done the legwork in terms of securing what's called the programmatic biological opinion for the frog. So we could skip the expensive field surveys to do that red-legged frog survey, one, because we know they're there, and two, because Caltrans has already got that in place for us. So as a part of that programmatic biological opinion, there's a series of measures that Caltrans, acting on behalf of FHWA, has already agreed to. And in those measures, it does require that a biologist be on site to, you know, relocate the species if it's found within the work area.
So in essence, we're skipping the survey but providing the mitigation?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I just want to be real clear to members of the audience and our planning commissioners that we're not reviewing a solution tonight. We're just reviewing the study and the mitigative negative deck. So there's really no solution before us to comment or discuss tonight. But with that, there is a sketch in there. And if that can be further explained, are we locked into the design solution with this environmental document, or does it allow other design solutions also to be considered?
So there was a pretty extensive alternatives analysis. And this project was actually really unique because we actually got to take two alternatives, which was approved by City Council because there was so much debate about the number of alternatives. And we were concerned because when you go to the environmental process, you have to go with one preferred alternative. And so that's basically what's presented in the document. So the short answer to your question is yes, but that is going to be what we're doing because we needed to get the environmental clearance for that alternative.
And I will just add that tonight's action is as you said, it's providing that the environmental potential environmental impacts have been examined and mitigated for correctly. And then later, once design is complete, we'll bring forward the specifics of this rehabilitation alternative to council for approval.
Couple more questions. Is the Green Truss performing a function anymore? Is it all the bottom trusses that are now supporting the bridge?
The bottom truss is essentially supporting the bridge.
That's my understanding, too. I don't mean to throw a wrench in the works, but I'm just going to share with you what's on my mind. I had the luxury of taking my son to Houston during the hurricane to move and relocate, and we actually spent considerable time in San Antonio for a week waiting for the hurricane. And we went on the river walk across from the Alamo, and it was the most beautiful walk I think we went on, and they had bridge after bridge after bridge, like our bridge that we have here, all done with the same green metal members and everything, and it was quite shallow underneath. And the way they did it and the way they articulate it was beautiful. I did take pictures that I'd love to throw, you know, and have available for the public and for the consultants and stuff to see. And what I really liked about it is it clear spanned the whole creek, the whole water course, and it was bearing on walls as opposed to those pilasters. And I know during our meetings and such, it was more of the buttress with the column. And does this environmental document allow a possible solution to be a wall instead of a column? And that's what I'm getting at, if we see that as a more aesthetic pleasing solution.
The challenge with the wall solution is the support, because what you don't see from above the ground is the pile footing underneath the ground. And so it's a long strip concrete footing with a whole bunch of individual piles that stick up. And one of the issues that this creek has, and I don't know if anyone's been over there recently, but there's been some pretty significant erosion on the park side. the hydraulics is kind of a concern with the erosion and the scour. And so by code, you're required to put that footing essentially below that effective scour level. And in this particular case, with these particular hydraulics, that's a very, very low elevation relative to the original ground. So it would require digging a really, really large hole, essentially, and then getting access at that low elevation and then dealing with potential groundwater as well really lends itself to more of a what we call a large diameter cast and drill hole pile. So from an engineering perspective, this is the most cost-effective solution. I do sympathize with the aesthetics involved because this is a historic resource. So we would have to, at this point, we'd have to demonstrate that additional impact was still covered by the environmental document. And correct me if I'm wrong, John, but we had a very detailed project description of what the impacts would be, and I think that even though the overall area, we actually had to provide quantity calculations of square footages of impacts, and so it'd be very difficult at this point to go back to a different substructure type without backing up.
So I believe you answered my question, which is it would create more impact, and therefore it would change the environmental document if we looked at a wall solution.
The other point that I can bring up is with regards to the clear span. since we're dealing with a historic trust here, that we are trying to minimize any modification to it whatsoever. In fact, we're doing very little to it because we want to keep it intact. So, that length is set. The 100 foot is set. And so basically in order to provide the same bridge in the same location, the bridge out there now has the approach span, so we kind of had to match the existing approach span. So I think Teresa alluded to it earlier in the 1914 flood, the original bridge was 100 feet and there was embankment basically on that south side. And so that whole abutment got taken out. There's actually a photo that we've seen floating around that shows kind of the bridge coming unseated and falling down into the creek. And so they had to basically put in that supplemental support, which became kind of an intermediate support instead of the clear span, just from these hydraulics that we've kind of been talking about.
Thank you. Any other questions of staff?
I just have a simple question. So the bridge is eligible for the National Register. Is that something that we will be applying for once the renovation is complete? Or can we apply for it early? And if we apply for it early, are there any grants that are available to help with the restoration?
Luckily, we found a solution that enables us to do the project without affecting its eligibility, and it is, we do have 100% funding for that. So in terms of proceeding with an actual listing, I don't think it matters necessarily timing of that sequence. We are certainly pleased that we have that opportunity to be able to continue to have the eligibility preserved with the rehabilitation work. So funding isn't necessarily required, and the timing for an actual listing, I'm not sure what that entails, but at least we can go forward with that type of thing, given we found the solution for the project.
Thank you. That was my only question.
Okay. Seeing no other questions from the commissioners, this is a public hearing. I am now opening it up to public comments. Please come to the mic, share your name, and you have 3 minutes. Do we have anyone from the public that wishes to address the commission? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public testimony, bring it back to the commission for review and further thoughts. Commissioner Long.
Well, it was a lot to go through, to be honest. You know, but reading it, I didn't see any glaring discrepancies, so I have no problem supporting and recommending to the City Council to move forward.
I just have to say the exact same thing. Yeah. Thank you for all the work that you guys did. It's a long. I mean, it seems like a long time to get to this point, but having had to swim through some of those same rivers that you guys swum through, nothing this big, of course, but just with homes and restaurants and what, I'm really kind of amazed that I think it actually has gone pretty fast. I know it probably doesn't seem like that way to you, but and the fact that what we end up with visually is something that a lot of people in our town are excited about, and it was so important to keep that look of that bridge and to be able to do it and to get a mitigated negative declaration. I think it's a great thing.
Well, this has been long awaited. We've been spending quite a few years on this and going through different options and City Council and coming back. And I think the stakeholders' meetings have been really fruitful in getting to progress as quickly as it did in the past 2 years. A lot of solutions have been looked at, bringing all the agencies together, because it's the agencies that really take a long time on the review and their input. And incredible job on this this initial study and mitigated negative declaration, because a lot of work does go into it, and with the consultants and staff's help and everything, it is a real thorough job. I've gone through it completely and been involved in it for a few years now, so all my questions had been answered, except, you know, when you go traveling, you start seeing things done in a new way, in a new interpretation. But then I remember all the meetings we had and geotechnic issues, and we have a different creek situation that's not improved, so you really got to take those geological issues into consideration. But I just, again, I want to make sure we dot the I's and cross the T's, that if there is a species in that creek, we don't want it to come back later to haunt us that we didn't take the proper protocol. But I think this is a great job. I'm anxious to move this on to City Council. And I'm ready to entertain a motion or make one myself.
I'll motion.
Yeah.
So I'll recommend to the City Council to adopt the draft initial study mitigated negative declaration for the Bridge Street Bridge Rehabilitation Project, and then instruct the city clerk to file a notice of determination.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Mack?
Yes. Motion passes 3-0. There are no non-public hearing items tonight. Item 9, we're going to move on to item 10, which is the Notice of Administrative Decision since September 19, 2017. It appears to be two. I have to put my glasses on. The text is small. One is a 157-square-foot addition to an existing second-story deck, and the second is construction of a new two-story, 1,419-square-foot addition with a 683-square-foot second-story component to an existing single-story residence. Is there any discussion on any of the items?
I just have a question regarding the view shed review. How does staff go about determining what is acceptable and what's not acceptable?
There's specific findings in our municipal code relating to view shed review, and so we essentially weigh the project against those findings, and really the overall objective is to see if there's really anything about the project that's intrusive in terms of blocking a view shed or putting a window right into somebody else's, you know, front room or something. So it usually if there's an issue, it's pretty evident, and we try to talk about redesign, but we go by the findings in the code.
And so the neighbors of this property were notified and were aware?
The noticing actually occurs at the approval, and they all have an opportunity to come in and review the project, see if there's anything wrong, and appeal it if necessary. However, we do encourage folks to talk to their neighbors in advance of any project consideration.
I had a quick question, and that's why I wanted to offer it up for discussion. And that's the first item. The second-story roof deck, I believe that's a roof deck. And we just went through looking at our ordinance and updating our ordinance and everything. Does this comply with what the commissioners have voted on in terms of second-story roof decks?
So the triggers for review of the roof deck and whether it should be encompassed in the viewshed review, this does meet those criteria. And then you weigh the actual project against the viewshed, same viewshed findings as any second-story addition, ultimately. Don't have many issues with, small decks of this size, but if they protrude out and they're covered or up high, then we do take a look at them, and we'll continue to do that with the modifications to the code that you recommended.
So it's in compliance with the modifications that
yes.
we have going now, not necessarily they're cast in stone yet. I just didn't know where this one's getting under the radar before that becomes a complete resolution or not.
That's correct. This has been reviewed in accordance with those triggers and the viewshed findings.
Thank you for that.
I have no questions.
Well, I'll make a motion to approve the Notice of Administrative Decision since September 19, 2017. That's cases number VSR-17-006 and VSR-17-006. 17-007.
Second.
A roll call, please. We have a motion and a second.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
And Commissioner George?
Yes.
Motion passes. Which brings us to our next item, Commissioner Communications. Does anyone on the commission have anything to share?
I have a couple of things. It is with a heavy heart that I don't know if anyone here knows or people watching, but Jude Genova, I would call Jude. Jude was our ambassador of the village. I saw Jude just about almost every day that I was here, very early in the morning, heading down to Alfie's, where his son worked. He was struck at the crosswalk in front of Rooster Creek. About a month ago now, and he passed away yesterday from complications from his accident. And I just want to express condolences to the family and to all of his family here. Jude was a light that shined in this village, and we're going to miss him very much. His funeral services are Saturday, and Jude has over 5,000 followers on Facebook. And there's a reason for that. But if you need more details as far as services, they're available on Facebook. And if you just search Jude Genova, you'll find those. So I thought I wanted to get that out of the way first. I was at the ARC meeting yesterday, and it was an interesting project that came before ARC, and that was the Black Twig Restaurant, where is it 134 East Branch? We actually had 134 East Branch and 134 West Branch on their agenda at the same time, which is kind of interesting because it's on the same street, but it's a different street. So it's a restaurant where Wilson Bennett Building is, and I asked Matt, there's some really cool architecture, and I really liked what they were going to do with it. And but then something kind of hit me was just the fact that Matt said, well, it's not going to come before Planning Commission because it doesn't need a CUP. And he said, I said, why is that? He said, well, it's no hard alcohol. And I went, okay. And I went home and I thought, wait, why didn't the two wine tasting rooms who don't serve hard alcohol have to do a CUP? And yet they don't. And I know that there's a lot of commissioners here have had questions about parking and that kind of thing. I started thinking about, okay, you've got a furniture store that had four or five people a day, and now we're going to have actually it's two restaurants in one building. Is there a reason why? What is the reason for that? There must be something more to that explanation that I didn't get.
Really, it's dictated by our table and our code and chapter 1636 and the category for. You know, wine tasting as a primary use requires a conditional use permit, and restaurants don't unless there's some circumstance where it's a bar or something like that.
There's no parking review or anything like that for restaurant can go in anywhere.
Uses can change within the area of the downtown parking district, and without most uses. And there's some nuances in the parking section without, review. But if you're adding space, if you're adding outdoor seating, those things will trigger, additional parking needs.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Thank you. And one more. I'd just like to remind people that the Rio Grande Beer Feast is happening once again for the second time on October 14th, and you can get your tickets on Eventbrite. It's from 2:30 to 5:30 in Heritage Square Park. Oh, and it benefits the public, Rio Grande Public Art is the charity that benefits.
Thank you for that.
And that's all I have.
I have a question. The last project that came before us was a rather large one, and we stacked a lot of items on that agenda, and I felt really bad for the applicants that had to, I don't even think they were applicants because it was the Bridge Street, had to sit through all of it to be told that it was going to be continued. So I'm not sure how to avoid that in the future, but there has to be a way for us to limit the number of items on our agenda if we believe they're going to be a popular item and a lot of people are going to come in to avoid situations like that. Because had that been an applicant who sat, for 6 hours waiting for us to get to their issue, that was a huge issue. So I was I'm concerned about that. To something like the draft mitigated negative declaration that came through, in order for us to truly review that, and this one was fine because we actually had more weeks to do so, but that was a really thick packet on top of two pretty big other items, and it didn't give us 3 days, didn't give us enough time to adequately go through and read and review in detail. And if we're going to be recommending a negative MND, MND to the city council, we need to be given enough time to actually go through it. So I know I've asked it before, but just getting it on Thursday night and having, and that was a holiday weekend, if we had to review that, either give us notice and say, hey, you have something really big coming before you, so we know to plan our weekend accordingly. But when it's a holiday weekend and we have plans and a package like that comes through, I don't want to do the city a disservice by not having enough time to review the information. So, and I did. I took the time to do it, and thankfully we had another weekend so I could continue reading it. But that was a tough, big package. And that being said, on that pack, I'm having an issue with going and looking at sites and not having story polls or having anywhere in the packet that shows us any sort of height differential between what they want to do and what is next to them. We had approved a 30-foot barn storage unit a while back, and it sounded okay. I went and I looked at the site, and it looked like it will be okay. I tried to guesstimate what 30 feet would look like, and it's gone up, and we did the neighborhood a disservice by approving that. And I need to see a story pole or at least a rendering. It has to be one or the other. And I know the most recent project didn't have anything near it. Put something in its place. Put a 3D rendering of something that would be possibly in its place just to give us an idea of what that looks like. Because really, when you're looking at an empty lot, it's hard to tell what's going up. And at minimum, a story pole should be required. So I know going to the last planning commissioner's convention, they were moving away from story polls and really moving towards renderings. But every packet I look at, we're not getting those either. So I think that short of saying we kind of need it. We need to be able to visualize, you know, and I don't carry around 30, 45-foot poles to stick up in the air to see, you know, what that looks like. So that's just a recommendation and a request that I have as a planning commissioner so that I can do my job better. I'd like to see either story poles or an accurate rendering of what that height difference compared to things around it is going to look like. And those are my comments.
Well, we kind of moved off of commission communications and onto staff communications. We're now having dialogue with staff. And I kind of want to chime in as well with Lon George because I share the same concern. The projects that are starting to come before us, the biggest outcry I'm hearing from the public is scale and mass and what is this going to look like. And quite frankly, the documents that have been coming before us have not been complete. And to be able to tell that interpretation of scale. And I like to make a request that no application comes before us unless it has dimensions on it. It's got to have the overall dimensions. Got to have, you know, they've been doing the sections. And they're showing the pretty picture and the rendering and the architectural illustration, but we're not getting the scale. So I would even chime in to even make a motion that staff does come back to update the application requirements to ensure that, you know, the north arrow's on there, there's a scale bar on each plan, that there's dimensions on all the floor plans. Because I was having a hard time when the hotel came through. There was no dimensions on the plan with that application as well. It's not good enough just to put the lot size. And there's a lot of calculations that are shown on these plans, and I can't verify whether they're accurate or not because there's no dimensions. So,
I mean, I think the thing to think about is that you've got a lot of these are shrunk, and so you could scale them, but once you shrink them, you can't scale them. So the person that making these documents when they first made them. They're like, well, you could just scale it if you needed to find out, but now you can't, and now we can't. Right. So I kind of agree with you there. That there's no reason not to have that information, and we shouldn't have to, you know, search that hard to find it because it's important information for everybody.
So if you like, we could make a motion to have maybe the submittal requirement sheet come back before us next time for a vote to include those items on applications.
Yeah, could we ask staff's opinion on that?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to review and bring back. I don't need a motion, and it's under comments. But certainly happy to address that in a with the checklist. I'm sure it's on there, but maybe not as robustly as it should be. So in the meantime, we have the ability to request anything that clarifies the project description, and we'll make sure to require not only just renderings, but the 3D aspect in respect to adjacent structures. Or an option of story poles. We have a couple projects in process that trying to think, one's advertised, a subdivision advertised coming before you. Not sure if we'll be able to get story poles or something up for that, but that's it's primarily a subdivision for residential use, so it's probably not as much of a an issue there, but certainly going forward we'll stress that to provide you a better opportunity to be able to assess the actual project description. So I'm happy to do that.
I really do like the idea of story poles. Number one, they're set by a surveyor, so they're certifying what the highest point is. And normally they do two or three poles, because just the roof peak, if it's a pitch, it's not fair. You need to see the eaves too. But what it does for us is it's hard to really visualize. It's easier for me, but to visualize the amount of grading that's going on. So when a site is being filled 6 feet, and then there's a 30-foot structure on top of that, it's hard to, well, where is this height in relationship to the existing site? And especially if there's a topography of 15% or more, you don't see that. And you're trying to visualize this mass on where the foundation is. So I do agree that that is very helpful and useful, not just for us, but for the community, anybody who drives by, you know, prior to a meeting, that be required.
So you have a checklist that you'll be able to present to us at the next meeting?
Certainly. We have a checklist. It's really an intermunicipal code. So happy to bring that for review.
Or you can just give me the code number and I can look it up. I don't know. I'm happy to do that too.
Any other questions for staff?
Can I address paper usage?
Yes.
What?
Paper usage?
Oh, paper.
So, I'm sorry, I'm honestly not trying to nitpick, but I got two of these because we got one, and then because we continued the project, we got another one. So is something like this emailable via PDF instead of having to give it to us in hard copy? Is that something that you have to discuss with commissioners? And I'm not sure how that works, but half the time I give the paper back to Debbie to recycle, but if we don't use it to begin with, we won't need to recycle it.
Certainly, if we have a continuance of a meeting, we can you can hold on to the documents unless they're revised. Please contact Debbie if you have a preference on how you receive your packet.
Okay, so we can do that.
Absolutely. And we just don't have yet a digital means for you to have at commission meetings to keep it all paperless, but we'll see about that in the future.
Thank you.
And one more question. Is there any new update on our parking standards or consultant or where in the process that is?
Sir, I was going to discuss this a little bit under staff communication, so with your permission, I'll just head into that. We have had our kickoff meeting for our East Grand Avenue master plan, which is comprised of master planning for East Grand Avenue, an economic component, and the parking study. So the commercial and mixed use and really multifamily parking components will be ferreted out through counts and assessment through that study, and then we can extend conclusions through other considerations for other areas of the city. So we've had that kickoff, and that's I think some parking counts are set to begin in maybe about a week at the end of this month. So that is finally going strong. Thank you for bringing that up, because we've concluded the bulk of our Bridge Street Bridge stakeholder group, but alas, we have a great opportunity for another stakeholder group to form, and that's for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. So my request to you, I know we only have three members of the commission here this evening, is to see if any of you want to participate on that. And again, that East Grand Avenue Master Plan effort is inclusive of removing obstacles for good infill development on East Grand Avenue, assessing the economics and the parking needs in order to do that. So I would certainly appreciate a volunteer from the commission.
Do we want to entertain that now or wait till we have a full commission?
We have some time, but we certainly by the next meeting I would want to be able to kind of get some names to that group.
Because I would definitely volunteer, but I don't think there's any, you know, I mean, more commissioners can attend, I'm sure, at a stakeholders meeting than one.
Certainly, two of you can easily both participate. Three then gets into the quorum realm,
exactly.
And it makes things a little harder. So if you want to have one of you or participate now and see if there's an additional person interested at the next meeting, that's fine too.
Any opinion on that?
I would move that we nominate you as our representative and ask if, well, are you interested in doing that, or is that?
I would do it if we needed someone, but if John's volunteering, then I'm happy to pass the baton.
Then maybe wait, then ask it, yeah. Glenn and mm-hmm. when they come back.
Okay. So we'll hold on the opinion on that for the two commissioners to come back to see if anyone else wants to participate.
Okay, great. Thank you. Oh, I did want to just address the agenda issue from last meeting. I apologize for that. We were pushing to have the Bridge Street Bridge item heard and the cannabis item heard, and then the continuance of the Lot 6 and 7 item, put it on the same agenda. And then due to considerations of folks being in escrow on the billiard facility, we just wanted to try to accommodate a pre-application for them as well. So the consultants were, they're used to public meetings and so forth, but I did apologize for that, and I apologize to you for having such a large agenda on that one evening. And certainly in regards to hefty items where there's a lot of technical review or just quantity issues, we'll try to notify you ahead of time. The MND was out circulating around on our website, and notices were out, but we can certainly try to alert you to that fact and direct you to those documents if they're going to be forthcoming to the commission.
So I just have a couple more items on my list for discussion, and that is Terry, when she was talking about Popeyes coming in and the drive-through and whatnot, that is an application. I believe we confirmed last time that will be coming before the Planning Commission.
Yes, that is an application for a conditional use permit.
So just for the viewers at home, that will be coming, and the public will get noticed and have an ability to come to the mic and talk about the proposal. And then the other thing, Wysong, that was a kind of a reoccurring thing. And after the last meeting, I had talked to the interim public works director, and it made it sound that there is no sand pile, that is an issue with the public or a safety hazard. I think it was more in referring to some dirt in a median, and there is no public safety issue. That's what I heard last time when I inquired about that.
Yes, that's our certainly my take in discussion with the last two public works directors in their discussions with Mr. Wysong. So it's a median constructed. It's our understanding that that's what he's referring to.
And in all fairness to our public works department, we have Robin that's just come aboard, and our new public works director, I believe, started last Monday.
Yes.
So,
Bill Robertson, yes.
We are now geared up and be able to answer questions to the public. And you're welcome, anybody, to direct further questions to our engineering staff. And then lastly, that last item that Mr. Wysong shared with, that's really a community sewer services district comment. So okay. That should be really addressed to the Wednesday night meetings and not necessarily to this commission. But I just want to let people know that we're not responding. We're going to respond to issues that we can respond to,
right.
And address staff to take a look at that are within our purview and within our city. So thank you. Seeing no other comments, that concludes our meeting of September 19, 2017, and I'm going to close the meeting.